everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 174. No. Let me try that again. It is episode number 164. Not quite as many. Wow. Yes.
For can Friday. It be
Friday,
can
December
the next year?
13th, 2013.
You guys it's Friday the 13th.
That explains it.
I didn't even notice that.
Realize that.
We'll explain the technical difficulties.
Does it explain my worst intro ever?
Say yes. No, that's just you.
Welcome to the show, everybody. If it's your first time joining us, usually we're not quite that bad, and we managed to get the day of the week right and, you know, the episode number, but it's all downhill from here, I'd like to think. I'm Phil Nickinson. I'm somebody who does something. I don't know. And we do this every week. Talk a little bit about Android and other stuff. From I'm going to change it up this week since we're screwing everything else up. From Seattle, we have Andrew Martinick.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, other than, you know. Other than the last minute and a half, it's been going pretty good today. We got Jerry Hildenbrand in West Virginia.
Hey, y'all. What's happening?
And in England, Alex Doby.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Actually, I'm pretty good. I'm kind of excited. You know what I got today?
What you
got? I got keys to my new office, so this might be our last podcast for me in my bedroom.
What?
That'd be kind of awesome. Wow. Maybe. We'll see. I got to get all moved in and, you know, get internet and stuff, but that's going to be fun. I haven't worked in an office in 4 years.
Bring donuts. Everybody will love you.
Yeah, okay. That's a good idea. And actually, my office is right next to the break room on that floor, so... It'll be fun. It'll be exciting. I'll be like a real worker again or something. You think I'll be more productive or less productive?
I don't think you can get less productive. I mean, you'll be more productive, Phil.
Can't get any worse. Oh, so what you guys been up to?
Getting over a cold.
Yeah. Getting over the flu.
I've been healthy, but I've been jealous of you guys and your new toys.
It's not exciting at all.
Dude, you should have seen the icicles the other day. That was exciting.
I had to put socks on this week. It got so cold.
Oh, whatever.
Have you guys seen that meme of, like, the entire United States is frozen except for Florida?
Which is, like, 80 degrees.
Well, not here. It hasn't been 80. Down south it has been. But, yeah, it's been kind of funny. So, welcome to the show, everybody. I promise we're going to talk about Android. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about this week, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a busy week.
Where do you guys want to start?
How about devices that I don't have and probably will never have?
Yeah, the Google Play Edition explosion just randomly.
Okay, fine. Hey, have you noticed Google's been a little busy this week?
A lot of updates, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. And they kind of do this every year right before Christmas. I don't know how much time they take off. I have a feeling this is the last week before everyone just gets out of town for a few days. And that's awesome. That's good. But they did this last year, too, and probably the year before. We're just, you know, we've seen so much stuff. So, yeah, we'll start with the Google Play Edition devices. What exactly did we get, Alex?
We got the Sony Z Ultra, although I guess I should call this a Z Ultra because it's American only. And we got the Google Play Edition LG G-Pad 8.3, which is a lot of syllables. So we got the first Google Play Edition tablet and the first sort of half phone, half tablet thing from Sony. And it's two kind of interesting devices that we haven't really seen from Google before. It's a tablet that fits between the 7 and the 10 and a phone that fits sort of somewhere north of the Nexus 5.
Let's talk about the devices themselves for a second, but I want you guys to keep in the back of your mind, and all you guys at home too. We've talked a lot lately about what a Nexus is. I want to talk about these two new devices and then maybe revisit that question. Because for me, the question's getting even more interesting. So let's start with the Z Ultra. 6.4 inches. Jerry's got it now. Jerry, do you have it there with you?
Yeah, I've got it right here. And it's big, guys. I mean, we reviewed it before, and people have talked about it before. But until you touch it, until you put it in your hands, you have no idea. This thing is huge.
And with the way that the bezels work out, it's proportioned the same as the new Nexus 7, it looks like.
It's, you know what? This is a sweet tablet. I know it's got a phone built in, But this is a really nice size if you think of it as a, you know, I wore a big phone. It's a great one-handed, you know, you hold it in one hand and you can use the other hand to do whatever. It's a weird size that I didn't think I'd like, but now that I have it in my hands, Alex is nodding his head. He knows. If you've ever held one, you know it's a size that could be very, very interesting for a lot of people.
I was actually nodding my head a few seconds ago, Jerry. There's kind of a lag, but I agree with what you said anyway. It's a tablet, not a phone. Google describes it as a tablet, and it is a tablet for your pocket, not necessarily a phone, although you can make phone calls on it.
Right. And, you know, that's the way I'm going to look at it. I'm going to look at it as a consumer tablet that also allows me to make telephone calls. I was holding it up to my ear to tease my wife, and I'll do that here. It's big, up against your ear. I know I got my headphones on, but it's bigger than you would normally expect to see. But with a Bluetooth headset or something, you'd be fine.
How are you finding the trim around the outside? Because it is very thin. The trim is kind of plasticky and also rounded. And the problem I had when I had it, which I didn't have the Sony Xperia Z Ultra for very long, but the issue I had was that it would be very slippery, and I lost track of the number of times that I almost dropped the thing.
I can see exactly where you're coming from. There's nothing. It's got a glass back like the Nexus 4 did, and there's nothing here to keep hold of.
Yeah.
There's no protrusions. There's no grippy material. If your hands are slightly damp or, you know, you're not paying close attention, I can see this one slipping right out. So that's something to watch out for.
You can't hang on to the fingerprints?
Yeah, it does. It is a pretty big fingerprint magnet, isn't it?
That's because of the coating, right? The coating Sony uses on the front and back, and we've seen this on countless Sony phones, including the Z1, which I've got here. The back is glass, but it also has the protective plastic sheet over the top, which they've got better at making less conspicuous, but it's still, you still got a glass phone that feels kind of plasticky.
Yep, and I looked in the corners with a magnifying glass just to be sure, because I agree, it feels like plastic.
You don't want another Andrew Martinick situation.
Did it come with the thing on the back that tells you not to peel the plastic thing off?
I don't think
the Z1 had that. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, yeah, I peeled whatever off was on it, and I don't think it did. It's a nice device. I mean, it's slim. I completely agree with Jerry. It's a big, you know, it's a small tablet. It really is.
Which is a good thing. You know, that's something that we all have to try for ourselves.
But so I think we were talking about this weird bug in the security menu that is on this device before the podcast. Do you want to just go into that a little bit?
Yeah,
because that's kind of a strange bug to be having.
J.R. Raphael, who we had on the podcast last week, and did a great job. And in fact, they had a lot of people say, you know, they loved having him on, so we'll definitely have him back. Spotted this, and he put a video up on Google+ this week. And Jerry, can you show it?
I'm going to try showing it. If you look here where it says security, let me try to get my finger on it. It says security right about in there. And I can tap it and show you what happens. It just stops. It kills the settings app completely. You know, that's a bug that probably should have been looked at, especially security.
It's kind of an important menu.
Yeah.
There's no other way to get into that menu.
Right.
Or modify the settings at all.
And I do believe, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't gotten a chance to look yet. If you grab a Nexus and open security, that's where you set unknown sources, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so if you want to use the Amazon App Store or anything like that, you're out of luck until Sony
They've got to send an OTA out for that.
Can't be right at all.
Correct. As soon as possible. This is a pretty poor experience for that.
I think JL was saying that factory resetting doesn't fix it. It's not something that, you know, it's just something that's misset. It does seem to be like a system level bug.
Are these shipping yet? Because, again, these are review units, so it's entirely possible that we've got some build on these that isn't actually going out to people who paid money for them. And I just don't know. I haven't bugged Google about this one.
I mean, it came in a they came in retail boxes, right?
Right. But let me see what it says they're shipping. I've got it open here.
But yeah, they should both be shipping, I think.
But here's the thing. While Jerry's looking at that, price on this guy.
Yeah, it leaves the warehouse in 1 to 2 business days. So as far as I can see, it's shipping now.
Yeah, we need to check on the forums. I mean, let's talk about the price. This thing, it's a little bit smaller than the Nexus 7 and costs twice as much almost.
Yeah, $650.
It's also got a faster CPU, a better camera, an SD card, a slimmer form factor. There's a bunch of stuff here that you don't get with the Nexus 7. And of course, this is a Sony device, not a Nexus device. And I guess Sony would be the body that would set the margins on this thing, not Google. As they would on a Nexus device. So it's kind of a different ballgame, really.
Agreed. It's, look at the prices of the Google Play S4 and HTC One.
Mm-hmm.
They match the retail price of the regular device, so we should have expected it.
So meanwhile, we've got this LG G-Pad 8.3 Google Play Edition. I think they changed the name a little bit, or it depends on who you ask. But on the box, it very much says G-Pad 8.3. So this is the one that Alex and Richard and I saw in Berlin earlier this year. And actually, we liked it a lot, right? I mean,
yeah, it was a nice tablet. The LG software is a bit weird. Not my favorite Android UI by a long stretch.
Hey, it's slowly I have a question better, about that, but... actually. Stop. Yeah? I have a serious question. And I say serious because I'm waving my arms around for some reason. How come it doesn't bother me as much on tablets as it does on a phone? The UI.
It's probably got to do with the...
Oh, we lose Alex?
Uh-oh.
Oh, nice. Alex.
On the same number of buttons.
We're losing Alex.
He's on the fringe of a very salient point there.
Yeah, I'm sure it was important. Alex, hang up and then dial back in. Or whatever you do to hang out.
I'll answer for him.
Okay.
I think it's something wrong with you, Phil.
Entirely possible. That is a legitimate answer.
The fact that it doesn't bother you in both cases means something's wrong with you.
It bothers me more on the tablet than it does on the phone. What that says? That there is a difference in the way it feels when you use it. Both of us are seeing it. We're just going the opposite direction with it.
Right. So let's hear from Andrew, who actually has it now.
I've had it for like 45 minutes.
That's long enough. You can review it.
Yeah, battery life tests and everything. I never used the original one, but I did use the G2, so I know what you're talking about with the software. Mm-hmm. The first thing I told Phil, we were talking before the show, is it feels really nice having, this being my first time using it. The metal feels really good. Everything is like... kind of another step above in fit and finish above the Nexus 7, which is already extremely well put together. It only comes in black. We should note there's no white and silver model.
The black looks so much better.
The black looks very, very nice and classy. It looks really good. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan of large tablets like the 9.5-10-inch tablet. I just think they look funky, and 16x9 in that size is just really too big. But holding this one in portrait in one hand with pretty big hands doesn't seem to be too much of a problem yet. So I'm interested to compare it next to the Nexus 7 because, that's $120 price difference. We're looking at $349 for this.
It definitely feels bigger. I think, when you're holding it, it's a little heavier. You definitely have to, use a little more energy to keep it,
I never had one for very long, but the little bit I monkeyed with one feels a lot like an iPad mini, doesn't it?
A little bit. I mean, it's obviously bigger, but I see where you're going.
It's
compared to
a wider, side. Yeah, it's a wider feel in your hand.
And I've got an iPad mini here. I should have tried that. It's sitting in a drawer somewhere. I see where you're going. It's a really nice look. This is what we've been saying about LG devices for I don't know how long, right? Yep. They're really nice and just don't get the sort of credit they deserve. And this is another one. I'm glad to see it. I think it's a fine price for this tablet. $350 is not out of reach.
I mean, the thing when I set it next to the Nexus 7, it's the Nexus 7 almost feels like I don't know, with larger devices getting in the 5.5 and 6-inch range, almost feels like it is a larger extension of a phone, whereas the G-Pad is coming down from the 10-inch size,
right,
where you can actually get like a real landscape experience on this. If you know, if you want to get really immersed in a movie or something that maybe wouldn't be possible on a 7-inch tablet, although the Nexus 7 with the way the logos and the bezels are laid out kind of indicates that it's supposed to be a landscape. But I don't know. They definitely look like they can stand side by side and actually fill two addressable markets.
We were talking about this.
To me,
Nope, go ahead.
Don't fill. Go ahead.
Burp. Burp. After you, sir.
Okay. So the weird thing about me for this is that it's a Wi-Fi only device, right? It's not LTE. Right. We have a bunch of other Google Play Edition phones that have the bands for the US market, and okay, they're US only devices. And it just seems strange that for something that is just Wi-Fi only and it's limited to the US, there are a lot more places they could sell this device that they aren't for no apparent reason, really.
Good point.
That is a little weird.
I don't know, you know, how strict any restrictions are on technology or what kind of hoops they have to jump through to sell it in other countries. Can't be any more bureaucratic red tape nonsense than it is here in the U.S. So you wonder why they haven't just done it.
And why LG chooses a tablet rather than a phone for their Google Play device is another kind of interesting point. I mean, they already have the Nexus, I guess, but...
Well, you know, that brings up another thing. This could be really, really good for LG.
Uh-huh.
They've got the last two Nexus phones and now a mid-sized tablet. If you make a 7-inch tablet, you know, we still have this UI flux thing where the TV DPI, where a 7-inch tablet can more resemble a phone and the larger tablets aren't supposed to. Now LG has everything with better access to the software from Google than they did before, or so we've heard. This has got to be good for their software department.
There's got to be some reason for them to have, you know, there's got to be some benefit for them having a Google Play Edition device in addition to a Nexus, right? If it was just about code, they already get the code through the Nexus program. So, you know, we can kind of only guess as to what LG's getting from this arrangement, but I guess it could be as simple as just the exposure of getting their brand as a tablet manufacturer on the Google Play Store.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe they can just look at how many Nexus 7s over the last year and a half Asus and Google have been able to sell. I mean, there's, you know, Google Play is clearly turning into a place where people can go for hardware, and I think that if they're right there next to, you know, what, one column below the Nexus 7, maybe that's just good brand recognition for them, and it doesn't cost them much to put it out as a separate SKU.
Maybe. Could be.
So here's my question. Why are these not Nexus devices? What makes these different now?
It depends what perspective you're going in from, doesn't it?
Yeah.
From the perspective of a consumer, you mean? I'm buying a tablet. Should I get a Nexus tablet or a Google Play?
Yeah, I mean, take your pick. If somebody says, should I get a Nexus tablet or should I get this G-Pad 8.3? I mean, size differences, spec differences, be damned. What makes a Nexus tablet better than one of these Google Play Edition tablets? Should I even be thinking, like, is that even a thing? I don't know. About these just feels more normal than the HTC One Google Play Edition. And maybe it's just because I don't use Sony, and because we just don't get that much Sony here in the States. I don't know. Something just feels different for me. Or am I just imagining that in my head?
No, I think to the Uber nerds, there is the Nexus device is better because it will get the small incremental updates faster. Whereas, on the other hand, the Google Play editions are better because they're closer to the open source Android product. So, I mean, there's very slight differences that I think only nerds are going to see.
And remember that the Nexus tablets and Nexus phones are sold widely in the US and elsewhere now, and just in regular stores. The Google Play editions are exactly that. They're Google Play editions. You can only get them through Google Play. The appeal is always going to be limited, and the means of getting hold of them is going to be limited to this one store. So it's going to be people who are fully sort of into the Google way of doing things and
which
the way
is kind
of buying products.
Funny, because you know, you kind of always thought of the Nexus line as being a little less accessible, but you know, the Google Play Edition when it only comes from Google Play is extremely inaccessible compared to wide multi-country availability of other hardware.
I almost think that if you try and understand the Google Play editions from the perspective of a consumer, you're kind of doing it wrong, because it's about the ecosystem and it's about manufacturers and Google and the relationship between the two, and getting code in the hands of people early, and just developing Android with Google and with manufacturers more than it is about selling a single product. I doubt any of the Google Play editions, either the old ones or the new ones, are going to sell particularly well. Instead, it's about getting code into hands and working with Google, Google working with the manufacturers, and hopefully letting them speed up the updates for other devices more quickly as a result.
There's got to be some sort of perceived monetary value, though. I mean, it Samsung didn't drop TouchWiz from a device that could potentially sell as many as their own Galaxy S4 on a whim.
I don't think it could potentially, though. I mean, the Galaxy S4 sells primarily on contract at a subsidized price. The average consumer doesn't pick up the GS4 from Google Play at a higher cost with fewer features.
But it just doesn't happen.
Maybe.
I don't see them, HTC the same, now Sony. They work very, very hard at their own custom software, and we complain about little bits and pieces of it, but they're very proud of it, and they should be. They've put a lot, both money and time, into it. There's got to be a big reason to abandon that.
I mean, the big theory was early access to code before now. The LG kind of does away with that theory because they already get the code early because they're an access OEM. So I don't know. It's tricky.
I mean, I think you can maybe look at it as it doesn't cost them all that much. Sure, the early access to code is still there, but it doesn't cost them that much to get in there, and they could be looking at it as they're getting in at the first level of, maybe Google decides to go a little farther with this Google Play thing. Google Play, they've spent a lot of time and money making it a very normal consumer-friendly brand with all of the digital goods. Maybe the manufacturers see it as, hey, we're going to get in on the first level of this, and we can, now we're one of those manufacturers that makes Google Play devices when they start being available in other places that aren't just the Play Store.
And it can't hurt to have, say what you want about having code for the Nexus device. It can't hurt to have code there for one of your devices. Even if it is running different software, right? There's an advantage to that's separate from just having the code for a Nexus device.
I think maybe it's just I want people to try this tablet because it's a really good tablet, hardware-wise, I think. And that it's Snapdragon 600 and not 800, I don't care. That means nothing to me. If you have to have the latest and greatest specs, fine. That's a perfectly valid thing to need. I don't. If it does everything I need it to do, yeah, so be it. I just want people to try this tablet, I think. And maybe that's what's making the difference for me. I don't know.
Well, with the price that it's at, more people are going to be able to afford it than the Sony thing, that's for sure.
Yeah, and certainly for all the Samsung tablets out there.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, while we're talking Sony, what do you guys think about the name of this thing? Because that was kind of weird.
The Ultra, not Xperia.
I mean, the Galaxy S4 Google Play Edition is still a Galaxy phone. Although I guess you kind of had a precedent there with the Galaxy Nexus being a Galaxy phone as well. But they dropped the Xperia name. It's not an Xperia phone. It's just a Sony.
It's probably a difference in marketing philosophies than anything else. Probably somebody at Sony said, nope, it's not an Xperia phone. Take it off. Where I could see Samsung saying, you know what? Don't care. We want Galaxy everything.
Yeah.
So that's probably – I'm not going to read too much into that.
And really it's something that can be dropped from the name and not fundamentally change the name. I mean, you drop Galaxy from S4 and it's going to be the Google Play Edition S4, which, I mean, sure, that's the shorthand nomenclature of it, but that's just not really going to work. I mean, the G-Pad 8.3, what do you do if you drop the G-Pad part? It's just the LG 8.3, so –
8.3.
I think it was something that they were both like. Sony was like, okay, they're historically build their brand very strongly around this Xperia thing, and this doesn't have any of that other than the physical design, so it makes sense.
Could be. I guess the Xperia brand just isn't as strong in the US as well.
No,
not at all. Strong, it doesn't even exist.
Mm. Well, hey, I've been dealing with Xperia since the Winmo days.
So. It doesn't have a strong brand presence, though.
No, not at all. We also got a white Nexus 7 for what that's worth. It's white.
Snow.
It's a Nexus 7. Yeah, and it's the same sort of like matte, not soft touch finish that the Nexus 5 has. So I've got it here. I guess we should give it away. Since did you see on the video I did, we cut. I guess I just asked if we need to give one away, and Alex said, "Meh." Somebody like tweeted it out. I was like, what? I remember somebody said that. Oh yeah, got caught on video. No, we'll give it away. Why not? So look for that maybe next week, I guess. What else? Hey, speaking of Google Play Edition, somebody just sent an email in saying their Google Play Edition HTC One is getting 442 as of this moment.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that yet.
Yeah, so Segue. Android, God, that was just Monday, wasn't it? Android 442 is out. Bug fixes, mostly. It patches the SMS bug that I never really worried about, but needed to be fixed. Presumably does some other stuff.
It seems like they pretty much halted the 441 update halfway through, and a lot of people saw 442 just straight from 44.
Yeah.
We saw the move from 441 to 442 was like a 1.5 megabyte update.
It was hilarious because like we all love getting the OTA links out for everybody so you can sideload the update. But you're talking, let me see if I can go through this in my head, because we should have started a spreadsheet. You've got the Nexus 4, two Nexus 7s, and the Nexus 5 that need to be updated, right? And the Nexus 10. The Nexus 4, and I don't have the Nexus 10 here, so I'm just going to think the phones I have. The Nexus 4 either updated from 4.4 or from 4.1, so those are two OTA updates you had to look out for. Same thing for the Nexus 5, same thing for the 7. Like, it was just getting ridiculous how many permutations there are. I guess it's not that many, but to see it all drop at once, it was like, okay, all right, there's another one. Which one do we need? I mean, this is why manufacturers don't want to put out more updates than they have to. And it was interesting that this one came so quickly. Now, the Nexus 5, it did fix that audio issue, right? So that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
fixed some audio issues.
Some audio issues, yes.
Right.
You know, some of
the. I mean, 441 fixed the audio issue, right, last week.
No, did it? Was it 4.1?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought 4.4.1 did.
See, I don't even remember it was.
Because the Nexus 5, you can actually like listen to something without headphones and not.
So that was 4.4.1. Yeah, I couldn't remember which update. But I mean, just so many balls in the air right now, and it's just a testament to why they don't necessarily push out over the air to everyone immediately. You know, it's a testament to why you don't see OTA updates every week.
Is it a testament to why manufacturers wait before updating skin devices? Because, you know, if you update straight away to 4.4 like HTC have, like Moto have, and then suddenly a point release or 2 point releases come out in quick succession, that just restarts the process all over again.
Yeah, maybe. It's certainly a testament to the testing process, because remember, the carriers charge the manufacturers every time they want to go through the certification process again. So it costs money. I'm sure there's wiggle room and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's a reason things take as long as they do sometimes, right or wrong, and that's one of them. I mean, that said, there's absolutely no denying how much better things have gotten. I mean, every single Moto X version, the four major carriers and U.S. Cellular has been updated to 4.4 within, 6-7 weeks of the code drop.
As we just noted, the new Droid devices are still hanging.
Hi, Verizon. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Which is funny, because that's not a normal Motorola phone, Alex, like Verizon. They are the sole manufacturer of Motorola phone, or of Droid phones.
But Alex has the explanation.
They got to put Droid Zap over.
Yeah.
Droid kill, right? And all the sweet wallpapers.
Yep.
What else?
The Gallery app. I've got Andrew working on a little project.
Okay, yeah, so I've installed it. What am I doing?
Well, hang on. Let's back up. So the Gallery app is dead in these new Google Play Edition devices. That's not a big surprise, right? I mean,
no.
Anyone who's followed this in the fact that there's a Gallery app and a Photos app, you know, and on Nexus devices, and it's pretty damn confusing. I mean, just using it for a few minutes, like, it works great. It works just fine. I have absolutely no problem using only a Photos app. I know it's missing a couple of the features that were built in on the Galaxy, on the Gallery app, the editing features. But I'm, you know, hop into Snapseed, just do it again. I'm fine.
But I think the important thing is, you know what? I don't care what Google does with a Nexus device. I don't care. As long as they make one that's a good reference piece of hardware to build AOSP with, so you have a target, that's all I care about, because I care what Google puts out on the open source side. The Gallery app is right there in AOSP. I took real quick this morning and built it. And does it work, Andrew?
Yeah, I have my picture I just took all of right. The screen right there.
So if anybody desperately has to have it and you bought one of these, I can't try it on the Z Ultra.
And you can even swipe right into the camera too from the Gallery app. It works just like it would if it was pre-installed.
So I can't do it on the Z Ultra because I can't get into the settings, Sony. But we had Andrew try it. So it works. I mean, nothing has changed except they picked one of the photo apps and gave it to you. So it's not that big a deal.
It does seem kind of weird, though, that they release 4.4. They talk a lot about how they've got this brand new, fantastic photo editing thing in 4.4, and then they go and kill the app about like 4 weeks later.
Yeah, it was interesting that the editor in the stock Gallery actually got, you know, notably better.
Yep.
So, and that stuff is not at all in the Photos app. You can crop it.
Not yet. There's probably a good chance it will be in the not too distant future.
Well, and the interesting part about it is all they have to do is push out an update in the Play Store to the Google Plus app, and it's there. So
suddenly everyone has that.
They could just open source Snapseed and throw it right in there. That would make me happy.
I mean, right, that's a lot of the stuff in the Gallery was the Snapseed stuff. So
right. I want to take a break. We haven't answered a single question yet from the Q&A. As soon as I find where that window went, because I can't find it.
Everything's changed.
There it is. It's usually popped out, and I couldn't find it. So let's answer some of the live questions from the Q&A. Jason asks, will Google Play Edition devices ever become more mainstream? It seems like they are more for Android enthusiasts and developers. I can't imagine being a big moneymaker for Google or the OEMs or the manufacturers.
Well, no, totally agree. It's not a big money maker for anyone. The point of this goes beyond selling a phone to a customer.
Okay, then.
But
Norris asks, what do you think about the notion of updating the Nexus 5 hardware? Should people who purchased the earlier version be upset? So, some background on this. There's a post on XDA that came out in the past day or two that supposedly came from some other Italian forum where somebody is showing two Nexus 5s, one on top of the other, and one of them appears to have larger speaker holes. And that's all I know about it. I can't vouch for the legitimacy of it. I don't, you know, could well be totally legit. I just don't know. I've got an email into Google to see. It could just be a manufacturing, you know, disparity. That sort of weirdness sometimes happens, although this looks like it would be a pretty big one. I don't know.
Is it really a big one, though?
I don't know. I haven't listened to, you know, audio output on one with larger holes and one with smaller holes.
I mean, the differences that they indicated were there is that the holes on the side of the phone for the volume rocker and the power button are smaller so that the buttons don't move as much, and the holes in the bottom are bigger, like minusculely bigger. That just looks like a changing, a slight refinement in tooling through the manufacturing process.
Could be. I don't know.
Are there nipples?
Well, right. And so that answers the question, you know, should I be upset if I bought one earlier and they changed something? No. I mean, that's life. You know, the Nexus 4 got the little nipples on the bottom. I think mine are all charging. I don't have them right here. Wait, nope. I don't have one. You know, to lift it up off a table a little bit. So you can hear the audio slightly more. Now, I mean, if you want to get upset about it, sure. That's kind of not the person I am, so I'm going to be okay.
There's no big functional change. There's nowhere near a functional change to these changes either, like in your daily use of the device.
Well, supposedly the buttons have changed as well, and I'm kind of a little bit skeptical about that because people have been saying that the buttons rattle on some and the buttons don't rattle on others. So, I mean, that could just be like a manufacturing difference. Yep. Of course, as manufacturing processes get better and, you know, LG and Google get a better handle on what they want to do, things will change further down the line. It happened with the Nexus 4. It's happened with other devices.
I'll be willing to bet it happens with every device. When it happens with the Nexus, you know the other 3,000 people that bought one because we're all on the internet talking to each other.
We saw this happen with the HTC One. Mm. I mean, you looked at one that was, you know, made in the first batch and one that was made when it released on Verizon like a million months later. There were like hardware differences in the way that the screen met up with the metal and everything that were more refined. I mean, you should want them to, you know, refine their manufacturing processes to get better along the way. That doesn't mean that your phone is going to like, you know, explode.
No, and the question here is it a change in design to improve the audio, which is what everybody assumes? Is it just one of those normal retooling of the manufacturing processes, which happens all the time? You know, in just about anything made ever, right? They always fix something.
Maybe it's thermal, and all the old ones are going to get hot.
Yeah.
The holes made it faster. I don't know. It's not the sort of thing I'm going to worry about. I'm curious. I'm curious to see what it is. I'm curious to see if it's legit. We've only seen that one picture, and that's anytime I only see one picture of something, it makes me wonder. So, we'll see. I don't know.
Take out the Dremel tool, and we'll show you a new version of the Nexus 5.
What shape you want them holes in?
Jason asks, holes. With the addition of these new Google Play Edition tablets, is it possible, and notice he said tablets and not tablet
good one, man.
Is it possible that Google is not even considering a new Nexus 10 and that the ones that we know are sitting in Best Buy in cages are still sitting in Best Buy in cages and nobody will ever see the light of day?
Where did you hear that, Phil?
Yeah, where'd you hear that?
I know people.
Okay.
So,
where is the Nexus 10?
I don't think that why would they go through the process of, you know, making a Nexus 10 all the way to the point, you know, like, oh, just in case LG doesn't want to come through on this G-pad, let's just have this other thing ready and just like ready to go. I don't think that that's the case. The fact that the G-pad and the Nexus 7 exists shows you that they don't mind having two tablets that are, you know, relatively close to each other.
The G-pad doesn't even figure in Google's tablet plans. They know they're not going to sell very many of them. Their tablet plans are about the Nexus 7 and probably about the Nexus 10 that we know exist, but God knows where it is.
Fair enough. Jason's asking a lot of questions. Is it possible that the rumored new Nexus TV, just the future plans for Chromecast? Is it feasible to start or develop a service that just streams live TV streams to the Chromecast?
Didn't the old Nexus TV show up on your Chromecast list if you wanted to cast to a device?
And I know there's some LG TVs out there with Google TV that work as a Chromecast.
So I think that's something you can pretty much safely bet that whatever Google does with Google TV, Chromecast is gonna, you know, be part of it.
Yeah.
It's too easy and too potentially big feature-wise to not include, so I think it'll be there.
Let's talk about, speaking of Google doing things, I have a section in the script here. Google updates all the things. I mean, talking about getting stuff out of the way before the holidays, like every Google app imaginable has been updated, I think.
Yeah.
Like, and literally everyone.
God help us if they just never update the change logs along with them.
Well, and sometimes it gets wonky if you happen to see it, like, right as it's going through Google Play. You might not see the change log right away. I was sitting here last night, like, do we have to write about every single one? It's bug fixes, you know. Like, at some point, editorially, there has to be a better way to do this, especially because you can go to Google Play and see what's been updated just fine. Do you really need me to, like...
Or if you're most people, you just have the auto-update box checked,
right,
and
exactly.
It just you know.
Yeah, and you see a notification, you swipe it away, and you don't even notice any of the changes.
Yeah, I mean, for like big updates, I get it. We need to write those. Right. But like every little thing, it's like, oh, okay. Don't we have something better to do? I don't know. We'll come up with something there.
We're trying.
Anything that stands out to you? I mean, Gmail got updated, or is in the process of...
Playbook stands out to me, maybe because I'm a big reader. But they allow you to upload phone or, you know, books EPUB from your phone. I have a feeling that that's something that their content providers had to have a lot of okay before they could do it.
Didn't they add? They added PDF upload several months back from the web.
Yep, and you
know if that included like all kinds of books and things.
But this makes it super easy to go to a website on your phone, download an EPUB, and shoot it right up to Google Play Books without paying for it. I don't suggest anybody do that, but a lot of you are going to anyway. And, you know, the book publishers knew that that would happen when it became available. So I'd like to, you know, I wish I was a fly on the wall during those discussions.
What about this thing where Gmail is going to start showing images automatically? There's been some gnashing of teeth over this. It's rolling out right now on the web. I got my notification today. And then sometime probably in January, they said early 2014, they're going to switch the app over as well. So right now, whenever you see an image embedded in an email, that image is hosted somewhere else, right? It's on the Android Central server. So the rare occasion we send out like a newsletter email, it's pulling from our servers. But Google is now basically going to copy them and proxy them, run it through Google servers and make sure, you know, we're not embedding malware in JPEGs or anything. Strange things can happen. Supposedly we'll speed things up as well, but you're going to lose some analytics potentially that way. I don't know. I kind of like it a little bit because if it's a spam email I need to open, I don't necessarily need to see the images or what. I don't know. Is it a big deal?
I like it. I think 99% of the time it's going to be good for the consumers. There is that 1% that a very crafty marketer could still find out whether you open the email or not, because now the image opens automatically, and you know that's how they can tell if you read the email. But that's
well, if it's being proxied by Google,
no, even
the image is stored on Google servers, then
Google
surely the image is accessed before then, and then Google just stores it.
But even Google admits there's a way you can form the URL that they can still, in very few cases, they didn't put a number on it or how it's done. I have no idea how it's done, but I would imagine that that's a very limited, you know, that's not going to happen very often. And it's like the flu vaccine. It helps 99% of the time. 1% of the time it gives you the flu. Is it worthwhile? Yeah. You know, it helps protect me from people. You know, they're looking for somebody to fish. They're not actually fishing you with these images, but they're trying to find out who they can.
Isn't that kind of an anti-Jerry stance right there?
Yes.
Shouldn't it be up to Jerry?
But there, Jerry has a mom and a wife and daughters and a son. Everybody who uses a smartphone, they need the protection. I can go in the settings and shut it off.
Fair enough.
And it is, you know, it'll be shut off the instant it hits me. But I don't want my mom to have to deal with it.
Some of those other things in the Gmail update, you get a vacation autoresponder.
Don't do those.
I hate those.
Oh, I'm doing one.
Just creating,
so doing one.
That's, you're not helping the ridiculous amount of email that people get by flooding more people with more vacation responder emails.
It's going to have pictures that automatically open in it.
Shinny says MailChimp tested and found that Google caches the image when you open the email and not before. So Google's fast. And you've also got new file attachments in the new Gmail app. So cool.
That's
cool.
Good.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a big deal. Hangouts was updated to supposedly fix the MMS issue.
We got a lot of tips about MMS having issues, but then as soon as I saw that, I had Jerry and Phil both send me MMS, and I picked them up and responded to them.
I am sorry for that picture, by the way.
Yeah, it was not fun. Anyways, and so we
you
kind
made
of
him
like
speechless, Phil.
So, I mean, it's one of those things. SMS, MMS, unlocked phones, APNs. You'd never. It's just like you can never nail down a cause. So then, when they come out with an update that says specifically that they're going to help fix MMS, you kind of just take their word for it. There was nothing definitive we could ever say that these people with this phone, this version of Hangouts on this carrier have MMS problems. There was no rhyme or reason to it.
Right.
Aren't you all glad that Google's handling your MMS messages these days?
Right, yeah, because they've done so well with Google Voice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still not thrilled about the idea of, I mean, it works okay on the Nexus 5. It's still kind of shoehorned into Hangouts in a way that's a little bit awkward. And I just don't know why I would ever enable this on a non-stock device.
Well, if you don't like it, you could just send a direct Instagram to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to...
Everybody else who sent it to can see it.
SMS through Hangouts. Yeah. And people are going to have to deal with that, and they're going to get confused.
I think people forget that MMS has always sucked. Just always.
Yeah.
It has always been extremely low res, never fetched properly, never sent properly. It's just never worked well.
And even Apple can't fix that. And as a user of iMessage, I can... It sucks. If Apple can't fix the user experience, we certainly can't expect Google to magically fix it. It's something's going to have to change before it can just work.
And Google has a backend. I mean, they already kind of have a weird workaround system for Google Voice now from Sprint and T-Mobile customers that'll email you the picture that they MMS to you. And that almost gives you a more hope, because then they're processing the image and emailing it to you.
Yeah, look at a regular Hangout. You know, you and I are on our phone. You're at the store somewhere and send me a picture. That works well through a data connection without being part of the SMS protocol, you know, using your standard data. That's where this has got to go, I think.
And that's probably what Google wants you to do. That's the reason Hangouts is integrated with MMS and SMS now. It wants you just to see contacts and not necessarily a service. And if you see someone's also on Hangouts, then you just, instead of sending an MMS, you just send a picture through that, and it's way easier and it actually works.
And, I mean, you can tell that, especially with Hangouts. Like, I went to go test something with a SMS to Phil, and in Hangouts, you know, it shows you names and contacts first, and you really have to say, no, I want to send it to a number. Yes, I want to send it to the number. Yep. And then send a regular SMS. It's, you know, they're really trying to, you know, not hide that, but it's a secondary function. Because, you know, just the regular data chat is way better.
Yep.
What else?
Android Device Manager app.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did anybody here get it to show all their devices?
It's never shown all of my
devices. I'm the wrong guy to ask.
Mine sucks because the 9 devices it gives me are ones I don't use anymore.
Exactly.
Can you go through, if you go through on the web version and sort all that out, will it work then?
I don't believe so. You don't have the option to hide like the Play Store, which is
But sad. I really wanted it to tell me that, you know, one of my phones was in my hand,
right,
and none of the phones that I have active are in that list. They're all pushed down.
I got it to do that. I mean, obviously, this is kind of worthless unless you have more than one device. Because if you lose your phone, you're not going to be able to use your phone to find your phone.
Well, and you might have a tablet.
That's what I'm saying.
A lot of people are upset about, they say it's got a security flaw as well, that if I pick up your phone, I can wipe your tablet.
Well, but if you
that,
leave
I
your
say,
computer unlocked.
Well, yeah, if your phone is not password protected, I can lock you out of your Google account anyway. Even before this came along.
God, there's so much worse stuff that somebody can do with your phone that's unlocked than wipe your tablet.
But to appease the people that want it, it wouldn't be hard for Google to put a setting in there where you could password lock.
Or you could just go to the settings menu of your phone, unless you have an Xperia or a Z Ultra Google Play Edition, and put a passcode lock on your phone, and then they can't get into anything, which is way better.
I'm looking at my list of devices here. The oldest one it has is the HTC One Max that I reviewed in mid-October. Everything else is more recent.
Huh.
So it's working okay here.
You lucky. Mine just shows all this old junk.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. What else? I think that's it for Google. Just update all your Google apps. So much more. All right, let's see. Pebble got a new firmware version update yesterday. That's pretty awesome. The cover lock screen is now in open beta on Google Play. I haven't used that in a while. I used an early version. It was okay. Just it wasn't up there for me. And because I'm using the Moto X, it kind of defeats the purpose a little bit. You want to talk at all about the CTIA and the FCC and this new unlocking your phone, unlocking your phone thing?
I actually do. And I think that a lot of people found it kind of interesting and confusing at the same time. So basically, about a month and a half ago, the new FCC chairman, Wheeler, kind of was really stern with the CTIA, which is a carrier consortium lobbying group, pretty much, that represents, you know, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, all of the big U.S. cellular, the big carriers. And the FCC chairman was kind of like, okay, it's time to get serious about cell phone unlocking, stop beating around the bush, like, let's do this. And they finally agreed to a set of standards that are actually surprisingly consumer-friendly. Pretty much the big pillars are that they have to notify you when your phone is capable to be unlocked. So the minute that your contract is over, they send you a text message or they call you and say, your phone can be unlocked. Would you like to unlock it? Which is something that they obviously don't want to do. They want you to think that your phone is still locked and you have to stay with them. And now they, when you request an unlock, they have to respond within 2 days, yes or no. So, you know, of course you can request an unlock even when you're in contract still. And they have to tell you within 2 days whether or not you can. And if they do, it has to be free. You can't have any strings attached to unlocking your phone. And all the carriers have agreed to implement all six of these guidelines within 1 year, which that's, you know, you have to give them some time to do it, I guess. But Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, U.S. Cellular all said that they're on board with that. I don't know. It's kind of more of a theoretical victory than like a real victory for normal people, but I still like that it happened.
I mean, Verizon, right? You unlock a Verizon phone, what actually happens?
Right.
The bans are still such that you probably can't use it on anything else in the U.S.
And the interesting thing is the CTA put a whole paragraph directly after the 6 points and said, just a reminder that this doesn't guarantee interoperability. It just guarantees that we will unlock your phone, which Verizon already
be of any use to you.
Which Verizon already ships nearly all of their devices GSM unlocked anyways, which that can be very useful because a lot of them are, you know, quad or pentaband HSPA plus, so you can actually use them on AT&T and T-Mobile if you really want to, and especially abroad. But that's why I say it's more of a theoretical victory. The FCC has to go so much farther if they want to like guarantee interoperability and all that kind of crazy stuff that we see in Europe, which they probably would have had to start doing that about 30 years ago if they wanted to do that. So that's kind of the problem. This is kind of just laying the groundwork for people to start thinking about unlocking, being reminded every single time around that their phones are unlockable, and then we can start the campaign of people understanding how the frequencies work and what phones work where.
And the lack of interoperability is just based into pretty much every phone sold into the U.S. because of the way the spectrum's organized, right?
Right, and that's kind of and the carriers buy and sell spectrum so that they specifically buy and sell spectrum so that they're not interoperable.
Yeah.
You know, you see Verizon getting ready to sell off all of their AWS or some of their AWS because they don't want to be interoperable with other people. They bought 700 megahertz at first because they didn't want to be interoperable with other people. AT&T and T-Mobile's kind of chased AT&T around. Whatever AT&T did, T-Mobile chased so that they could use AT&T phones. You know, Sprint, you know, whatever, Sprint to Sprint. That's the way that it's going to be. And sadly, this is about as far as the FCC is going to get CTIA to go.
Which is a shame because that's what needs fixed.
Yeah.
AT&T, T-Mobile, you know, I guess it's not fair to AT&T that T-Mobile does everything they can so we can, you know, they can use the AT&T phones that they don't get.
Hey, I would say it's unfair.
It's not fair to consumers that AT&T and Verizon do everything they can to make sure that the LTE on the 700 megahertz band doesn't work the same on each carrier. That's a crock of crap.
Right, and they're all playing games with the spectrum that they buy so that it can be slightly inoperable, and you see Sprint owning PCS spectrum and not allowing anybody to buy anything like relatively close to it. You know, they come up with all kind of crazy reasons just so, you know, they say that it's going to interfere or whatever, just so they can't use the same devices. And, you know, all the you know, Samsung makes a Galaxy S4 that, you know, is like completely different on each carrier just so that they're not interoperable, you know, and that's not Samsung's fault. That's just the way that the carrier OEM situation is. But like I said, it would have had to start 20, 30, 40 years ago if they wanted forced interoperability.
Speaking of things working together in weird ways, what about Sprint decided, or I guess it announced it's going to start selling a new version of the Galaxy S4 that'll work with that Sprint Spark LTE stuff.
So can I keep going?
Yeah.
Well, so this just gets back to this whole thing where Sprint owns three different chunks of spectrum, and they, you know, what, 900, 1900, 2500 or something of the sort. And, you know, they have these subset of new devices that are Spark ready, which can use these three different bands at the same time and hand off between them quickly. And the original Galaxy S4 just came out before they did this. You know, Sprint is relatively agile. They keep changing things every year or so. And these devices are well into development for Sprint. You know, Samsung is not making a device like the Sprint device anywhere else. So they have to make the Sprint phone, and that comes well before May or April when it's finally on store shelves. So they can't actually know what the hardware is going to be. And then when Sprint comes back to them and says, oh, we want something Spark compatible, Samsung says, oh, sure, we'll make you another phone. But that doesn't mean that the old ones are compatible.
That's insane.
I just, you know what? I would have made it the Samsung Galaxy Spark. With a different name, there would be less fighting and people complaining.
It would have been better. We saw the same exact thing happen last year. T-Mobile, Galaxy S3, Galaxy S3 LTE.
The year before with the Galaxy S2 on AT&T, the year before with the Galaxy S on T-Mobile, this is a constant thing.
We saw Galaxy S, Galaxy S4G, and then the S2, the S2 Skyrocket,
and now this,
whatever.
Yep, and the smart thing to do, Samsung's not doing it to screw anybody.
No, Sprint's putting in the order.
The smart thing to do would be, I think, to change the name, the Galaxy Spark. That sounds good. That's what I'm going to call it from now on.
Does it have do we know yet whether it has the horrible pinwheel thing that the Macs had?
Oh, you know it will.
It's got to. In fact, that's probably the only thing that's new.
I hope it's a TouchWiz one that's green and orange and blue and yellow instead of all white.
Sparks that's been off it in little different colors.
Excellent. So
this is the problem with all of this this crazy spectrum stuff that we were just talking about, though, with the FCC. If we had interoperability, this stuff would happen less often, because the phone that you bought, they could change stuff on the back end, but the operating frequencies that these phones are working on would be the same. Sprint wouldn't just randomly buy crazy chunks of spectrum and refarm it from something else and have to operate on three random bands like that have to give it a branding.
Can Mobile Nation set up a political PAC, an action group? We can get the FCC. We can lobby and have things done, because that's what all this is. Whoever buys the best congressman gets what they want through people like the FCC.
Ain't nobody got Verizon money, though.
If Mobile Nations could do it, maybe we could get a congressman from, like, West Virginia or Delaware or something like that.
Yeah, New Hampshire.
One of the cut price ones.
Meanwhile, while we've been talking about this, the Wall Street Journal just reported that Sprint's looking at buying T-Mobile.
We knew some of this stuff was going to happen when SoftBank got involved.
That's insane.
They've got some crazy amount of money they want to pump in. Here's the problem, though. Well, right now, Deutsche Telekom still owns a majority. Even though T-Mobile's public, they still own a majority of the stock. They would, you know, there would have to be some kind of crazy deal there. But Sprint, just go home, we'll Sprint.
Just imagine that little pinwheel on all your T-Mobile phones.
That's right.
Let's not everybody freak out about this yet, because, you know, AT&T and T-Mobile got scuttled, and
I'm already hoarding food and stuff. It's just too late not to freak out.
The crazy thing is, though.
No, going from five carriers to three is a big difference.
Not
going to
happen.
Well, the interesting thing was that Sprint was allowed to have this huge outside investment from SoftBank. 70-something percent of the company sold. They let T-Mobile buy Metro PCS, which was the sixth largest or something. They let AT&T buy the rest of Alltel. But this is kind of on a different scale. I was just talking to Jerry before that, you know, T-Mobile's at the rate they're going, one more year, they're going to have more customers than Sprint. I think Sprint is maybe just looking at the numbers and saying, hey, let's go ahead and maybe try to buy them or do some crazy stuff to take a chunk out of them before they surpass us and never see us again.
I picture this office building in Manhattan. Up in the penthouse, there's this giant octopus that sits at a desk and wrapped in, he's just, his tentacles, he's just buying all this stuff.
Is that Dan Hesse or?
I don't know, it's a Cthulhu Wireless. Let's just make it happen.
It's Matsuyoshi-san.
I'm never going to be able to think of Dan Hesse as a human now, Jerry.
I don't know, Dan Hesse is severely in YOLO mode right now. He doesn't really care.
All right, you want to do a couple more questions and we're going to get out of here?
Sure.
it's been a long week. and there's still stuff coming, by the way. I'm still waiting on Google Glass. That's why I put it on a minute ago. I'm still waiting on the December update to drop. The only thing worse than not knowing when an update's coming is knowing that an update's coming and you just don't know when.
I thought you were saying not knowing when a tablet's coming.
Or a tablet.
Mm. Those things hurt when they hit you and you don't know what they're coming.
Phil, why don't you wear the sunglasses on that thing? Those are pretty damn nice.
I have. They are nice.
Oh, I've just never seen
yeah, them. No, the first time I wore reason. No, first time I wore them out in public, I wore them with the sunglasses. It was in my column. You don't remember that? Hey, by the way, have you written yours for this week?
Yes.
Close.
I'm doing tonight. All right, Emerson wants to know, Moto X or Nexus 5 for a power user? I don't know. What's power user? I use a Moto X and a Nexus 5. Am I a power user? Am I an ultra power user because I use both? Just asking.
Well, we're all free to answer.
If you're the kind of power user that's about functionality and about battery life, then that's the X. If you're the kind of power user that's about hacking, about performance and that kind of stuff, it's probably the Nexus.
Good answer.
Probably, yeah.
That was. We need to write that down somewhere.
if only we were recording this.
Exactly.
Chris wants to know, why does it take several days to roll out over-the-air updates? I'm on Sprint. It was easier to sideload KitKat rather than wait. Is it a carrier issue or a Google issue?
That had nothing to do with you being on Sprint if you're talking about the Nexus 5.
And that was a Google issue. They do it on purpose.
Yep.
So they can find things like broken 4.4.1 and replace it with 4.4.2 that's hopefully not broken.
I don't know. Was 4.4.1 broken?
I have no idea. The internet says it was.
But they that's why. No, and if you want to sideload it, sideload it. I do. No problem with that. Brian wants to know, will the Galaxy Note 2 in the UK be getting an update anytime soon? Like hardware-wise?
Has it not got its 4.3 yet?
It's funny based on the way it works with unlocked phones or with sort of common market phones, if you want to call them that. It's based on region code, which is either unlocked or based on carrier. So generally with a Note, I think it's Germany that gets them first. Germany unlocked, and then it filters out to other unlocked regions, and then the carriers get it. So just normally like it's not more than a few weeks. So it's probably not going to be too long, probably by the end of January, I'd imagine.
With the potential merger of Sprint and T-Mobile, do you think they will standardize on CDMA or GSM?
It's not going to happen.
Well, if it did, I don't know. I mean,
if it did happen, they would. Well, it depends what Sprint is trying to do, right? They could buy them. They could buy them and make them one of their MVNOs. I mean, there's no reason why Sprint would buy T-Mobile and kill the T-Mobile brand. That's worth way too much money to them. And the network, you know, some people could argue whether which network is more valuable as well. So it would cost way too much to shut down T-Mobile's network and switch it to something else, especially as T-Mobile bought MetroPCS and is shutting off all of their CDMA.
Switch it all to Nextel so I can chirp people.
Yeah. So it depends.
They're going to standardize it all on iDEN.
No, they shut down iDEN. I'm going to hop into the email real quick from Doug. I recently purchased a Moto X and it's great. One of my favorite features is to say, okay, Google Now, and ask it to text somebody. Unfortunately, it will only text through the stock messaging app now, and since I'm a Google Voice user, I'm not texting through my preferred number. I've tried... Oh, my phone's lighting up because I keep saying, okay, Google Now. I've tried setting my default messaging app to Google Voice, but still no luck. Any thoughts? I hadn't thought about this, actually, after the 4.4 update, but showed up.
Interesting thing is, I remember when they added the quick text message responses, this was an issue, and then they changed it so that you could use Google Voice for that.
The only time I use it is in the car, and it uses my Google Voice number, but that could be Moto Assist that will use your Google Voice number. It asked me the first time which one I wanted to use.
When I texted you this morning, Jerry, that's why, because we got that email, and it's sent through my SIM number and not my Google Voice number.
So I'm not sure. I that's something we'll have to look at again, if I ever can dig all the snow out and go somewhere again.
So we'll see. Anything else? When is the CES party? Asked Ryan. Don't know yet. We're working on it. Stay tuned.
As soon as Phil leaves, come to my house for your own.
No, we've got, if you haven't seen the videos this week, it is officially announced. We're good to go. We're working with John Acali from Geekbeat, and we're going to be set up in South Hall in Vegas. If you're at CES, you absolutely have to come by and say hi, because it's going to be awesome. We're trying to do some sort of get together. We will figure that out and announce it as soon as we can. Anything else? Are we done? I think we're done.
I think we might be done.
It's quite the podcast. I feel like I'm forgetting something. Oh, I am forgetting to announce something. You know what I did? Well, we've been sitting here recording.
What'd you do?
I pushed live to Google Play the all new CrackBerry app for Android. Is that what you expected me to say?
Yes.
Actually, yeah, but...
Yeah, all right, you guys don't count. So yeah, just push that to Google Play, so it should be live in a couple hours or by the time most people listen to this. It's basically the Android Central app with CrackBerry. In fact, there's still one little Android icon tucked away in the app that we need to fix. I'm sure we'll get hate mail because of that. But
you think?
You think? You know, works and acts the same, so it's actually really good. It's missing the wallpaper gallery, because that's a
thing
that needs to be fixed. Yeah, you see it now? I didn't notice it.
It's actually, the hilarious part is it's actually very accurate.
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, so that's going to be live. And you know, if you're on BlackBerry and you want to sideload this, I guess you can, but you're going to be better off with the CB10 app, just you know, native to BlackBerry 10 instead.
Yeah, that would be kind of inception.
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, it's really good. You know, Neil, the developer, same guy who did our app, and we just kind of ported everything over. Hopefully we'll get some of the other apps up eventually, soon, although we still have some things we want to do to the AC app, so I need my developer back. So yeah, if you're on a BlackBerry user on Android, definitely go get it and check it out. And I'm glad we're doing it. I'm glad we're getting more of the sites on more platforms.
When we have them all done, can we do a Nokia Experts app?
We should, or pre-central.
Yeah, just you know.
All right, and if you want to email us, do it at podcast@androidcentral.com. Or better yet, just hop into the live Q&A during the Hangout. It's pretty awesome how well this is working. I wish we could answer all the questions. Maybe we'll do another. Maybe we'll do that right before Christmas if like nothing happens next week.
Oh yeah, we can get eggnog all up and
We haven't done a tanked podcast in a while. Maybe we'll
speak for yourself, but
So the live Q&A is pretty awesome. You can get us all on Google Plus. Just search our names. We're all vain and have the vanity URLs and all that good stuff. As we are every week, we are brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. You can call 888-468-6158 or just go to that website thingy, ShopAndroid.com. Hey, you know what they added in there? I need to check that they added, but I think they're adding it. The old Samsung S Pebble, the Muse. You remember that thing?
Yeah. Oh, the little music controller thing.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. They still make them?
The guy from the store asked me last night, he's like, did anybody buy any of these? I was like, oh my God, I completely forgot
about Pebble.
I know, right? That would be shopandroid.com.
It was pretty slick.
Actually, it was.
If nobody bought it, it's because they didn't know about it. That thing was pretty cool.
I tried. Well,
they launched that with the S3, didn't they?
Yeah. Remember I
like
said
it was in the keynote.
They should give one away with every device. It was awesome. I liked it.
They should have just put it in the box with like the first 200,000 they sold or something.
All right, that's it. I think we're done. We're out. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody at home, everybody live, everybody watching the video. Just thank everybody. I love you all. I love you guys, Jerry and Alex and even Andrew.
Hey, that's good.
I love you too, Phil.
All right, we'll catch you all next week.
Love
you. Later.
Chicken grease.
Bye.